Now that U.S.-Cuba relations have thawed, with a road to normalization and a U.S. embassy in Havana at some point in the near future, what does that mean for Asada Shakur? Will she be extradited to the U.S. and forced back to prison? Those questions were raised recently by our next guest, David A. Love, in a piece on thegriot.com. David A. Love is a contributor to The Griot and executive editor of blackcommentator.com. He also writes for The Progressive, Huffington Post, and The Guardian. David, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
And I know you're an old friend of WBAI, so it's great to have you back on the airwaves here.
Oh, yeah, it's always a pleasure to be back as a BAI alum.
While WBAI listeners are probably the radio audience most familiar with the case of Asada Shakur, for our younger listeners and folks who might not be as familiar with her, let's just talk about a little bit of background. Who is Asada Shakur? Tell us about her background in the revolutionary struggle.
Yes, yes. Well, first of all, as a point of reference for the younger audience, people should keep in mind that Asada Shakur was a step aunt and godmother to the late hip-hop icon Tupac Shakur. Mm. Now, Asada was involved in the Black Liberation Movement, the Student Rights Movement, as well as the movement to end the Vietnam War, and she joined the Black Panther Party following the assassination of Dr. King. And she joined in Oakland and later became a leader in the Harlem chapter of the Black Panthers. We should keep in mind that she helped organize the free breakfast program, mm-hmm. as well as a free clinic and other programs. Now, by 1969, the Black Panther Party had been targeted as the number one organization that was deemed a danger to U.S. security,
right.
As a part of the FBI's COINTEL program, which mm-hmm. was the brainchild of J. Edgar Hoover. COINTEL was really serious business. Mm-hmm. Hoover decided to target the Black Liberation Movement, Civil Rights Movement, anti-war movement, and essentially decided that he wanted to prevent the rise of a Black Messiah, mm-hmm. wanted to disrupt all of the Black social justice movements. And as a result of that, people should realize that, you know, all of the, you know, Black leadership was decimated, mm-hmm. either thrown in prison or assassinated or otherwise neutralized. Mm-hmm. So Asada Shakur found herself within that context. The FBI decided that she was going to be targeted, and as a result, she in fact was targeted, mm-hmm. as was the rest of the Black Liberation Movement.
Right. The FBI in the late 1970s actually called her the revolutionary mother hen of a Black Liberation Army cell, allegedly responsible for attacks on police. And so in the 1970s, she was apprehended and convicted, but she then escaped from prison and ended up in Cuba, we know. So how did she end up in Cuba, and what status does she have there now?
Yes. Well, I think that's a very interesting story because Cuba gave her asylum on the grounds that she was not going to be safe in the United States,
right.
and that if she had remained there, she was going to be in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the grounds that Cuba used to grant her asylum were really based on firm international law standards, mm-hmm. Essentially the Refugee Convention.
Right.
So she is a political prisoner, and she was granted asylum and has been there for a number of years. And I really don't think that I really don't think there's any chance that Cuba would extradite her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to get into that, but let's talk very briefly about sort of the period leading up to this. So just last year, the FBI increased the bounty for Assata's capture to $2 million. It had previously been $1 million raised earlier in the 2000s, and the FBI put her on the list of its most wanted terrorists. She's the first woman to ever hold that title in the FBI. So why do you think this move was made so recently under the Obama administration? And do you think it has to do more with Cuban politics than actual U.S. politics?
Well, actually, I think it has more to do with U.S. politics than with Cuban politics. For one, you know, the United States has really been on this thing with domestic terrorism. Mm. And, you know, as a result of the bombings in Boston at the Boston Marathon, we have this war on terror. And there has been this move to go after domestic terrorism as well as international terrorism. And I believe that that's really part of it. But another part of the equation is that people have to keep in mind that, you know, as I had mentioned, black leadership from those days, from the late 60s, early 70s, was decimated. Mm-hmm. Everyone was thrown in jail or otherwise neutralized. And Assata Shakur was actually the last woman standing.
Wow.
And I believe that there were people in the FBI who could not let that go. And so it was really unfinished business. But I think the larger issue is it sends a strong signal when you have someone such as Assata Shakur on the most wanted list, the 10 most wanted terrorists deemed as dangerous, you know, the most dangerous people by the FBI.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, Assata Shakur and 9 other people who are al-Qaeda operatives and other, you know, various so-called Islamic terrorists, for them to go after someone such as Assata Shakur after 40 years, it really tells you a lot. I think what they're really trying to do is subdue and neutralize any types of new social movements that are going to develop here in the United States. It's sort of a signal that they're sending to people who are engaged in social justice work at this point that perhaps they should take a second look and not get involved.
David A. Love, let me ask you this, and you just started to mentioned this a moment ago. We see now that Governor Christie is calling for President Obama to force the extradition of Assata Shakur. The colonel, I believe it's Fuentes in New Jersey, New Jersey State Trooper Commander, is also calling for that. What's the likelihood, you just started to speak about that, of Cuba doing so?
I believe that it's not likely, and I'll tell you why. Assuming that the current state of affairs with the road to normalization of relations continues between the U.S. and Cuba, the two countries are still going to have differences of opinion.
Right.
And I would find it very hard to believe that Cuba would all of a sudden drastically change its policy in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a precedent for this. Back during the Black Liberation Struggle, there was a group of Black Panthers who actually fled to France.
Mm.
And France and the U.S. have extradition treaties that they follow. But the French decided that they would not return the Panthers to the U.S. Because of a well-grounded fear that if the Panthers had returned to the U.S., they would have been persecuted prosecuted based on their political beliefs, which is really the type of grounds that Cuba can use, assuming that they develop some sort of extradition agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, France and the U.S. are very close allies.
Very close, yes.
And if that can happen, then certainly that could happen in the case of Cuba.
Right. And, you know, actually, there is an existing extradition treaty with Cuba that's been on the books since, you know, the early 1900s. I think it's 1904. And that extradition treaty just, you know, it obviously sort of fell out of use as these two countries broke off relations after the 1959 revolution. But it is still on the books. Nothing about that revolution sort of took this extradition treaty out of force. So as you say, the idea of her as a political prisoner, you know, sort of persecuted for her political beliefs, keeping her, keeping Cuba from actually extraditing her, does seem, there are a lot of lawyers who are making that case now.
Yes, yes. And frankly, I think that this is a path that for the U.S. is really, it's something that they don't want to do because, you know, to go down the road of extraditing her, you know, all of the legacy of the COINTEL program,
right,
and the framing of Asada, as well as other political prisoners, all of that is going to come to light.
Exactly.
And at a time when there is mistrust of government institutions, particularly law enforcement, and black folks in particular these days are really taking a look at the way they're being treated and oppressed,
mm-hmm.
This does not help them. So I think that they would be well served not to try.
So there's a growing movement asking President Obama before he leaves office to actually pardon Asada. In just 2 days, almost 20,000 people have signed a petition asking for this pardon on change.org. Do you think a movement to get Obama to pardon Asada can gain any traction?
I think that it could. I think because of the environment right now, I think that it's ripe for this type of action. People should note, however, that of the various charges that she had, all of the federal charges were thrown out against her. Her conviction for murder was in the New Jersey state
right.
court, so
mm-hmm.
technically it would take a pardon by Governor Christie.
I see. And that doesn't seem very likely.
No, that doesn't seem likely at all. I mean, one would think that President Obama has influence,
right?
But technically, he could not do that.
I see.
I could envision, you know, hypothetically, if Asada were to be extradited, which I don't think will happen, and she were charged under federal terrorism statutes
right.
and
mm-hmm.
convicted of that,
right.
perhaps the president would have the power to pardon her. But that still doesn't resolve the state charges.
Right.
And also, President Obama, I believe, has had sort of a conservative approach when it comes to pardoning people.
Mm.
And I don't really think that he would stick his neck out in that particular
right.
case.
Yeah, and as Michael mentioned earlier, you know, this weekend we know that Chris Christie sent a letter to President Obama asking for him to demand the return of Asada Shakur to the U.S. so that she could finish her sentence there in New Jersey. It's a long, detailed letter. He tweeted it out with the tweet, RT, if you agree, that is retweet, if you agree President Obama should demand the return of Chesimard, her given name, her married name, from Cuba to the U.S. to finish her sentence. So Chris Christie waging a sort of publicity campaign around this case as well. We just have a few minutes left before we move to Democracy Now! At 8 o'clock here on the WBAI Morning Show. So I want to get your reaction, David A. Love, to in light of the shooting this weekend of these two police officers in Brooklyn, I wonder if you can reflect on the differences today from the moment of struggle in which Asada was central. I asked this of our last guest as well, Kianga Yamada Taylor. The movement that's emerging now is very loose. Obviously, its leadership is diffuse, but it seems clear that there is no call for the young folks leading the Black Lives Matter movement for revolutionary violence, right? That's not something that we've seen. So what's different today from the Black freedom struggles of the 60s and 70s?
Yes, yes. A lot of differences. For one, the current movement is social media driven to a great degree, which didn't exist back then. Also, this movement is women led. Not to say that women were not leaders in the struggles of the late 60s and early 70s, but black women are particularly taking the lead in this movement, mm-hmm. and also the killing of women, particularly women of color by police, is an issue that I believe has been understated and hidden. The civil rights movement of the 60s and early 70s was more male-dominated, and there were also issues of sexism. I think that nowadays, whereas the Black Panther Party sort of pioneered the issue of Second Amendment social activism, nowadays it seems that that's now the purview of the white-oriented right wing as far as armed struggle and fighting against the government. Also, Black Panther Party had a 10-point program, very clearly delineated. We don't see as much of that today in terms of what the protesters want, but I'm hoping that in the days and months to come, there will be more clarity in terms of what exactly people are looking for, what's the end goal, what laws are we looking for.
And you have a new piece up on the Griot in response to these police murders, where you make the case that these murders should not be allowed to derail the movement. You say we have to be able to condemn the killing of police officers as we condemn police brutality. The two are not mutually exclusive, and I would suggest they are interrelated. In just the 2 minutes that we have left, can you talk about that interrelation and why you think it's important for this movement to continue?
Oh, yes. I believe that the people who would use the killing of these two cops to derail the movement, you know, they were going to try to derail the movement whether or not these cops were shot and killed. We have to decry and condemn the violence against Black people in the street, and we cannot, I believe, tolerate the killing that just occurred in Brooklyn. It doesn't serve us well to condone that. And I haven't really heard anyone condoning that. But I think that we're really entering some dangerous times here where things are coming to light and people really have to keep their eyes open. I believe the police, some police are trying to wage a war against the community, and we really have to be vigilant and make sure that that doesn't happen. Very dangerous times that we're entering here. And the movement is necessary because of all the reforms that people know we need. We can't have the police continue to be an occupying force committing violence against us like the slave patrols. And there are people who are interested in maintaining the status quo and making sure that things continue as they have been. But it's clear that with the changing demographics of this country, and you have a movement here that is multiracial, things are brewing. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that people are not going to tolerate maintaining the way things have been.
We are talking today to David A. Love, contributor to The Griot and executive editor of BlackCommentator.com, getting reaction to the police shooting and the ongoing protests. David, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.